Okay, let's look at our third case of people in the New Testament that are swearing. My third point is the Apostle Paul takes an Old Testament passage about swearing and he applies that to Christians. He takes an Old Testament passage about swearing and he applies it to Christians. So let's look at this in Isaiah 45, verse 23. And you'll recognize this when we start reading it. But whose turn to read? Okay, Josiah.
I have sworn by myself, the word has gone out of my mouth in righteousness and shall not return, that unto me every knee shall bow, every tongue shall swear.
Okay. That passage right there, now God, here God is swearing, and every tongue shall take the oath, or every tongue shall swear. Every knee shall bow, and every tongue shall swear. In other words, they shall swear allegiance to God. That's what that's basically saying. So, the historical setting is saying that one day, not just Israel, but every tongue, even Gentiles, will swear allegiance to me and bow their knees before me. And this passage is quoted in Romans chapter 14. Nathan, it's your turn. Read verse 11. Romans 14, 11.
For it is written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God.
Now, here in Romans 14, he's actually quoting Isaiah 45, verse 23. In Isaiah 45, it says, every knee shall bow, and every tongue shall take the oath, or every tongue shall swear. Here, every knee shall bow, and every tongue shall confess. So, basically what it's saying is when we obey the gospel and we make our confession and we get baptized, we are in the process of confessing Christ and being baptized into Christ. We are taking an oath. We are vowing a vow to be loyal and faithful to the Lord the rest of our lives. That's why when you read in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 20 and 21, the Bible says that if somebody obeys the gospel and then they fall away, the latter end is worse for them than the beginning. For it would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than to have known it and turn away from the holy commandment delivered unto them. How can you be worse than never obeying the gospel? How could that be worse? The way you could be worse is you make a vow to God and then you don't keep it. And that's what is happening in Ecclesiastes. Remember chapter 5, we read about, you know, don't be rash with your mouth. Don't be hasty to utter words before God. Let your words be few. And then in verse 5, Ecclesiastes 5, verse 5 says, better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Well, that's what a person doing when they become a Christian and then they fall away. God, would you please, if you will save me from my sins, I vow to you, I will be faithful to you all the days of my life. And then God forgives us. And then we break the vow. And we are worse off now. A man has lied to God and has broken his word when he quits the church. All right? Number four. The Apostle Paul puts some Christians under oath. All right? Let's look at this. The Apostle Paul puts Christians under an oath. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Nehemiah. verse 27.
By the Lord, that this epistle be read to all the holy brethren.
That word charge, that if you underline that word there in your Bible, the word charge is coming from the Greek verb horizo. Horizo. Oh, excuse me, I'm saying that wrong. Horkidzo. Horkidzo. And it means to put under oath. And so Paul is putting these brethren under oath. You have to read this to all the holy brethren. It must be read. So, you know what? Maybe we ought to take Bible reading a little bit more serious. And maybe we ought to start reading Scripture to brethren and explaining to brethren what Scripture says, instead of coming up with harebrained topics that nobody's ever thought of before and trying to keep people entertained with them. All right? Now, what I'm saying here then, Paul is putting Christians under an oath. Even though Jesus said, swear not at all, he puts them under oath. Number five, Paul and others made vows. And what is a vow? A vow is a voluntary oath. And so Paul takes a vow. Acts chapter 18, verse 18. Joseph.
So Paul still remained a good while. Then when he took leave of the brethren and sailed for Syria, Priscilla and Aquila were with him, for he had his hair cut off at Cenchrea, for he had taken a vow.
Okay, he took a vow, and he's a Christian when he does that. As a matter of fact, we would all insist that married couples to be married need to take vows to be married. All right, number six, there was an angel of God who swore. An angel swore. Revelation chapter 10, verses 5 and 6. Evan?
And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth, lifted up his head to heaven.
His
hand,
yes,
to heaven. And swear by him that liveth forever and ever.
Okay. There he raised his hand to heaven and swore by him who lives forever and ever. Here's an angel of heaven taking an oath before God, raising his hand and the whole works. Number seven, God himself swore. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 13. Cody, Hebrews 6, 13.
God made a promise to Abraham because he could swear by no greater. He swore by himself.
God swore by himself. And this passage doesn't have any of the negative connotations to it that you might would expect if swearing is always wrong under all circumstances. Why would God do that if it came from the evil one? And so, my point in showing you all of these seven examples of Jesus, the Apostle Paul, members in the church, an angel, God himself, all of these people are swearing. And it doesn't seem like that the Bible is looking down upon anybody for doing this, even though Jesus said, swear not at all. So when I read swear not at all, the only conclusion I can make is that this is a limited command. It's a limited command. It's not unlimited. Now let me illustrate what I mean by this. Perhaps you've seen this on a bumper sticker or maybe on a sign. Don't drink and drive. Is that the law, Jacob?
It is the law.
It is the law. You cannot drink and drive. Now, coming over this morning, I had my new coffee mug that Nathan gave me for Father's Day, full of coffee. And I was drinking my coffee while driving my car. Did I violate the law, Nehemiah? No. But the law is don't drink and drive. So how did I not break the law? That's talking about alcohol. Don't drink alcohol and drive. Now, when Jesus said swear not at all, he meant don't swear a certain kind of way at all. Not at all. There is a certain kind of way that you cannot swear at all. And now he's going to tell us, what is this certain way that I cannot swear at all? Well, let's look at it. Let's read Matthew chapter 5, verse 34 through 36. Justin.
But I say to you, do not swear at all. Neither.
Okay, wait, stop right there. If in my Bible, I don't know about yours, but in my Bible, it says, do not swear at all. And then it has a colon. Does yours? Has a colon. In other words, now the Lord is going to start enumerating A and then B and then C. He's going to start enumerating all the ways that we are not to swear at all. Not at all. Okay, so start over and read now.
But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black.
Now, nowhere does the Bible teach or say, do not swear in the name of God. It just doesn't say that. Matter of fact, in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 13, we started there, Deuteronomy 6, 13, and it says, when you swear, you shall swear by my name. And you can't swear in any other way. It has to be by the name of God. And so now Jesus gives this prohibition. So here's the rule. When you swear by God's name. But now here it you swear not at all by heaven. Or by the earth, or by Jerusalem, or by your own head. Now, do you notice that God's name is not mentioned here? He told us to swear his name. But his name isn't there. His name isn't there. What these Jews had done is they'd come up with a good idea, they thought. And their idea was, you know, I'm going to swear, but I won't say God's name. And since I didn't say his name, it's not really binding. And I really don't have to keep my word. Let's look at this. Only if you swear in a certain way do you have to tell the truth. Only if you swear in a certain way do you have to keep your word. They've come up with a way of getting around keeping their word and telling the truth. So let's see, how did they do this? Matthew chapter 23. Adam? Read me verses 16 through 19.
Woe to you, blind guides, who say, whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing, but whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, it is nothing, but whoever swears by the gift that is on it, he is obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift?
You see, these people had come up with this system, and they said, I don't have to keep my word because I didn't swear by the gold on the, or by the gift on the altar. No, I swore by the altar, and so I don't have to keep my word. Or somebody said, I don't have to keep my word because I swore by the temple, and the temple has nothing. But the gold in the temple, now there's you something valuable. And you swore by the gold of the temple. You have to keep your word now. You see, and so the more valuable the object was, the more obligated you were to keep your word and tell the truth. They'd come up with that kind of a system. And what they were doing is they were ending up violating their oaths, and they were lying and thinking they were getting away with it. And so Jesus is saying, you can't get around God, and you can't, just because you didn't mention His name, don't think that you can now break your word and you can now tell a lie and break your promises just because you didn't mention God's name and you swore by heaven. Because if you're going to swear by heaven, you might as well have sworn by God to start with, because heaven is the throne of God. And if you're going to swear by the earth, you might as well have sworn by God's name to begin with and gone ahead and told the truth and gone ahead and keep your word, because if you swear by the earth, don't you know that's His footstool? And if you swear by Jerusalem, don't you know that's the city of the great King? And so you might as well have just gone ahead and sworn by God to start with, instead of trying to get around God's name and violate your oaths thinking you're going to get away with something. And you can't even swear by your own head. Don't you know God's in control of your head, making your hair white or black? And don't think that just because you swore by your head instead of using God's name, that you can get away with breaking your oath or telling a lie. Swearing by these inanimate objects like heaven or the earth or Jerusalem or your own head, it's inappropriate to begin with, because Jerusalem doesn't know whether I told the truth or not. But God does. And the earth doesn't know whether or not I'm keeping my word. But now God knows. God knows. So, it's inappropriate to swear by those objects. But now, here's another passage that we do have to consider. Look at James chapter 5. And Jacob, we're back to you. James 5, verse 12.
But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven, nor by earth, or by any other oath. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no, lest you fall into judgment.
Okay, now he says don't swear by heaven, the earth, or any other. All right, here's the word other. Now, you know, that looks like heaven, the earth, or any other oath, including God. Well, wait a minute. In the Greek, this word other is kind of interesting. There are two Greek words that are translated other. That's kind of strange, but it's the truth. The first word other is this word allos. I need to make my sigma properly. Allos. And this means another or other of the same kind. The next Greek word that's translated other is the word heteros. Heteros. And heteros is what we get the word heterosexual from. Heteros means another of a different kind. Okay? So if you're a heterosexual, you like a sex of a different kind than what you are. Okay? So heteros and allos. Now when James said don't swear by heaven or by the earth or by any other oath, he uses this word allos right there. In other words, don't swear by heaven, by the earth, or any other oath of the same kind. That's what he's saying. No other oath of the same kind as this. So, that helps to clarify what James is getting at. Now, let's go back to Matthew 5, and let's read verse 37. And we need a King James rendition on this one, because it actually is more accurate than the New King James on this verse. So, we'll have Josiah read Matthew 5, 37 from the King James Version.
Let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil.
Okay, the New King James Version leaves out any word that is equivalent with the word communication. It just says, let your yea be yea and let your nay be nay, or something like that. And actually, there is the Greek word logos, or word. Let your word be yea, yea, or nay, nay. That means your daily conversation. Your daily conversation. And from this, we learn that the oaths that we are not to swear at all are oaths that are, they're not judicial oaths. No court among the Jews would have ever allowed someone to swear by heaven or by the earth or Jerusalem or their head. You don't do that in a court of law, a judicial court of law. Rather, these oaths that Jesus is saying you do not swear at all like this are made in daily conversations. They are pronounced over trivial matters, and they are made with the intent of circumventing the truth. So, you know, when you swear like Jesus said, don't swear at all, what you doing it, you're wanting to add some force to what you're saying so people will listen to you. But you don't want to be held responsible and be struck dead if you're wrong. And so the way you keep from getting struck dead is you just don't mention God's name. And so, you know what we have people doing is they start using the word gosh. And you'll be talking to them just all everyday language, and they'll say, gosh, yes. They want to add some weight and a little bit of punch to what they're saying, to emphasize, I'm telling you, yes. But they don't want to use God's name. Oh, that wouldn't sound good for a Christian to say, God, yes, in daily conversation. So they use this little word here, gosh. And do you know what that word is? That's called a euphemism. And it is a way to say God without saying God. And you ask people, do you know what you just said? You do that. If you hear a Christian use that word, just act shocked and say, oh, do you know what? You just use God's name lightly. And they can say, I didn't say the name of God. You say, well, that's what that word means. Well, that's not what I meant. That's what those Jews said when they used the word heaven. They'd swear by heaven. And you say, oh, do you know what you're saying? And they say, well, I didn't say the name of God. Well, that's what you mean. I didn't mean that. That's what people do when they use that word. Or they use the word golly. Oh, and I didn't mean God when I used that word. Well, do you know what that word is? That's a euphemism for God. And it's someone saying the name of God without actually saying the name of God. It's a way to get around the force of a solemn oath. And James said, don't swear by heaven, by the earth, or by any other oath of the same kind. These words are wrong to use in our daily conversation because they are equivalent. They are of the same kind as heaven, earth, Jerusalem, or your head. And you are not to swear at all, like this. That's why these words are wrong. What are some other words? Well, you got the word G. Well, that's just a euphemism for Jesus. Well, I didn't mean Jesus when I said that little old word. I didn't mean Jesus' name. Well, that's what that means. Just like heaven is the throne of God and earth is His footstool. Then there's the word heck. Heck no, people say. Oh, a good Christian would never say hell no. Because when you're saying hell, you're saying, may I go to hell if I'm not telling the truth. But they don't want to say that. Oh, a good Christian would never say something that awful. Call down a curse on themselves, asking for themselves to go to hell if they're not telling the truth. But you know what you're doing when you're using that word? You might as well just say hell. Because that's what that word means. And Jesus is saying, you don't swear at all with these words in this way. It's wrong. It is sinful. Look at Matthew 12 and verse 36. Nathan?
Shall you swear by your head?
No, Matthew 12.
But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it on the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned.
Every idle word, you'll give account of it on the day of judgment. Now, Jesus said, let your word, let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. In your daily routine conversations, daily speech, Jesus is forbidding habitual swearing. You can't swear to everything every day. Remember Ecclesiastes chapter 5, let your words be few. Do not utter anything hastily before God. Don't be taking trivial casual oaths every day. You let your words be few, and you only save an oath for serious, solemn occasions where you intend to use God's name. McGarvey said this, instead of an oath for confirmation on ordinary occasions, Jesus enjoins a simple yea, yea, or nay, nay. In your daily speech, you just say yes and no. How come that we can't swear to everything every day? How come we can't do that? Because Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5 and in verse 37, let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatever is more than these comes from the evil one. Now, the swearing that Jesus is condemning came from the evil one. Did judicial oaths in the name of God, did they come from the evil one? No. Matter of fact, God commanded it, Deuteronomy chapter 6. The angel that stood with one foot on the water and one on the land raised his hand to the God of heaven. He swore. That was a solemn judicial oath, and he was not making trivial conversation. Okay, that did not come from the evil one. The Apostle Paul, the angel, Jesus, when they swore, they weren't doing something that originated from the evil one. However, if you hear somebody swearing to something trivial and casual every day, that came from the evil one. You ever heard anybody say, "I swear I can bench press 300 pounds. I swear I can eat a dozen eggs for breakfast. I swear I could have any girl I wanted." Right. You know what? When somebody swears like that, you better just get ready, because they're getting to tell you the biggest whopper you ever heard. You know good and well it's not the truth. And they do too. But they're trying to add some weight to try to get you to believe it. Because they know that their reputation and their word is worthless. They got no reputation. Everybody knows they're liars. And so to try to add some weight to get you to believe their outlandish lies, they have to start using these curse words. Now, James words this just a little bit differently. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus said in verse 37, let your daily conversation be yes and no in your daily conversation. But James changes the wording just a little bit. Let's look at James 5 and verse 12 and read that again. And whose turn? Read it. Jacob. Oh, okay.
But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no, no, lest you fall into judgment.
Let your yes be yes and your no, no. That's a little bit different. Instead of saying let your conversation every day be just yes or no, this is saying when you say yes, you mean yes. And when you say no, you mean no. Okay. Now, let me illustrate this with, and at the same time I'm making a confession, and maybe we should have prayer after I tell you this. But when I was a kid, when a little bitty kid, we go to town, and Mama had a 3-point checklist that we had to clear before we were allowed to go to town. She'd say, "Have you washed your face, brushed your teeth, and put on plenty of deodorant?" Those were our, before we could go to town, we had to do those three things. So, I was a kid and I was getting to that stage in life where I didn't like to always wash my face, and I didn't always like to brush my teeth, and I didn't always put on plenty of deodorant. And so we got in the car and we're getting ready to go to town, and Mom goes through the checklist. "Do you wash your face and brush your teeth and put on plenty of deodorant?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And then under my breath, I said, "Last week." Now, she didn't really ask, "Did you do it today?" I knew that's what she meant. But, strictly speaking, I didn't say anything false, I thought anyway. But I did leave the wrong impression, didn't I? I did tell a lie. And so, this is what the Catholic Church calls mental reservation. Mental reservation is where you say something with your words, but mentally you have reservations about it. You're holding back information. You're holding back information. Now, here's what the New Catholic Encyclopedia says. If, for example, a wife who has been unfaithful, but after her lapse has received the sacrament of penance, If she is asked by her husband if she has committed adultery, she could truthfully reply, "I am free from sin." The speaker does not question the hearer's right to know a truth. He presents the truth as discoverable but not disclosed. He has made no false statement but has allowed an admissible ambiguity, foreseeing a possible or even probable deception. Now, you understand what that's saying? Here's this wife, she's been unfaithful to her wedding vows. She goes to the priest and she receives sacrament of penance and she says her prayers. And now her husband asks, "Were you with another man?" And she says, "I am free from sin." And so she has not, according to the Catholic Encyclopedia, she has doesn't question the hearer's right to know the truth. She presents the truth as discoverable but not disclosed. She didn't present the whole truth. She has allowed an admissible ambiguity. She has said something which is ambiguous, and she knows it, to try to cloud the issue. So here's what the Catholic Encyclopedia went on to say. Simplicity in speech is to be regarded as obligatory under ordinary circumstances. In other words, ordinarily, you should tell the truth. But, you know, simplicity of speech is to be obligatory under ordinary circumstances. Couldn't you think of a reason why today's not ordinary and why today I'm not going to tell the truth? Well, we could do that every day. Every day we could figure out why this is not ordinary. Now, the Jehovah's Witnesses are like the Catholics. They like to tell lies too. I know this because when they come to my door and we have this argument at the door and they say, "Well, we've got to go." You know, all of a sudden there's this great pressing appointment and they got to go now. I think they're really lying. But they've got to go and they say, "We'll be back tomorrow." And they never come back. And I think they knew when they said that they weren't coming back. But here's what, they have a little book called Aid to Bible Understanding. And here's what they write. Lying generally involves saying something false to a person not entitled to know the truth. If they're not entitled to the truth, you don't have to tell the truth to them. So I guess that's why they lie to me, is because I'm not entitled to the truth. Okay? Here's what they go on and write in their book. While malicious lying is definitely condemned in the Bible, this does not mean that a person is under obligation to divulge truthful information to people who are not entitled to it. If they're not entitled to the truth, you don't have to tell it to them. And here's the example they like to use, and here's what one of our own preachers, he's not with us anymore, he's in and out with us. But anyway, back in the days of Nazi Germany, the Nazis would come and knock on the door and say, "Are you hiding any Jews in your house?" And so the Jehovah's Witnesses and our preacher friend would say, "You don't have to tell them the truth, because the Nazis are not entitled to know the truth about a Jew that you're hiding." So when the Nazis come and they knock on the door, "Are you hiding a Jew in this house?" You can say no. And that's all right. Well, it's not right to lie. What could we say if that happened? What about it? What would you do, Nehemiah? What if you and your family were hiding a Jew? And the Nazi soldiers show up, and they say, "Nehemiah, are you hiding Jews in this house?" And you say, "Up third floor, look in the attic." What could you say? Because I don't want to say, "Yeah, third floor, attic. There's a secret door up there. Go up there and look." I don't want to say that, but what could I say? Well, I'm glad we're talking about it today then. So here's something that we could say. We could say, search. Take a look for yourself. Or we could just say, I'm not telling you. Now that'd probably mean you are. But you could say something like, I do not cooperate with the Nazis. And whether I am or not, I do not cooperate. Now, you'll end up in jail for it. You'll end up beaten for saying something like that. But we can't lie. We can't just lie and think that we can lie and get away with it. So we need to stop and think, what can I say in situations like that? And we just need to say something like, search, and if you can find a Jew, you're welcome to them. That would not be a lie. So, are all oaths forbidden today? When we have to go to court and we have to testify in a court as a witness, is it sinful to put your hand on the Bible and raise your hand in a court of law and take a judicial oath in the name of God? And the answer is no. That's not what Jesus was talking about. Jesus himself did that in Matthew 26, verse 63 and 64, when he took an oath. Now let's read this passage in Hebrews chapter 6, Joseph. Hebrews 6, verse 16.
Swear by the greater, and an oath of confirmation is for them an end of all dispute.
An oath for confirmation is an end of all dispute. And that passage right there is showing us that a judicial oath, when used properly, ends disputes. And I think if the church is having some difficult problems and they took some oaths from brethren, that might solve some problems. And if the brethren set down the two troublemakers that are about to split the church, and they made them swear an oath, I swear I will not bring this subject up anymore, then maybe that might end some disputes in the church. And then when this man breaks his oath, the church would have some grounds to withdraw fellowship from this person. See? So, what's the contrast then between the old and the new law? Well, the Old Testament law guarded the sacredness of truth in court. But Jesus is going to add to this. You remember we said sometimes what Jesus does, let me make some room here. You got the Old Testament and you got the New Testament. And sometimes Jesus will take something in the Old Testament and he will just bring it right over and put it in the New. Okay? Like, for example, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, yeah, it's going to be that way over here too. And so now we love our neighbor as ourselves, not because the Old Testament said that, but because the New Testament teaches us this. And sometimes Jesus will take something and he will add to it, and then he will, after he has added to it, he will put it over here. Like, for example, thou shalt not commit adultery. Jesus said that, yes, that's right. You can't commit adultery over here either. But I'm going to add something. From now on, if you look on a woman to lust after her, you've committed adultery. And after he makes that addition, then he puts it in his new law. Okay? Sometimes Jesus will restrict. We'll put a minus sign right there. And for example, if you want to divorce your wife, just give her a writing of divorcement. And Jesus says, uh-uh. Now we're going to restrict this. Now only for fornication. And then after he makes that restriction, he puts it in the New Testament here. And that's the law now. And then sometimes there's an Old Testament law that Jesus just simply said, uh-uh. We're not going to let that one get over here. Like, for example, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. that we'll talk about after lunch. Well, what we're looking at here is we're looking at this kind of a situation here in Matthew 5, 33 through 37. Jesus is saying that, yes, you take oaths and you guard the truth in court just like the Old Testament. But now, we're going to add something now. Now, we're going to guard the sacredness of truth not just in court, but out of court. In our daily conversations, from now on, our yes means yes, and our no means no in our daily conversations. And so, Jesus is forbidding casual, flippant swearing that's unnecessary. You don't have to swear when just a simple yes or no is sufficient. He's saying that casual, flippant swearing to everything comes from the evil one, and it profanes God's name. When you say something in the name of God and then you break your word, or you tell a lie, you are profaning the name of God, and you're violating that law that said, do not take the name of God in vain. You're using His name flippantly. And then we also learn that evasive speech with the intent to deceive is wrong. Let your yes be yes. And let your no be no. And the Old Testament didn't teach those things. And so didn't make them as binding as judicial oaths. So our world today is starving for people that are honest and truthful, and have integrity. And certainly in how we speak, that's one way. Let's close by looking at Psalm 24. I will read these last two. Psalm 24, verse 3. Who may ascend into the hill of the Lord? Or who may stand in His holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to an idol, nor sworn deceitfully. Who's going to go to heaven? Somebody who doesn't swear deceitfully. And then Psalm 15, verse 1. This is that chapter that would make a great sermon. Psalm 15, verse 1. Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? Verse 4. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. That's who's going to dwell in God's tabernacle. So that's our study on swear not at all. And I hope that it's not so confusing that you're scratching your head wondering what did it mean. I hope that it's understandable. So at this time, it's 12 o'clock straight up, best I can tell, and actually 5 after on my watch. So we'll take a break for lunch.